Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, The Bold and the Beautiful has its best ratings since the 2006-2007 season. The Necktie Killer is revealed on Days of Our Lives. Is Michael the next mob boss of Port Charles on General Hospital? And Patty finds out Sharon's secret on The Young and the Restless. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Jamie Giddens, welcome.
Hey.
Jillian Bow, welcome.
Hello.
Sarah Babel, welcome.
Howdy.
And Mike Jupinville, welcome.
Hi.
Jamie, the Necktie Killer.
Yes.
Is it one? Are you being strangled by the storyline, or are you enjoying it?
No, I'm not enjoying it. I wish I was. It would make my life in our comments so much easier, but no, I'm not. Days has had so many iconic serial killers, one who's returning soon, Andre Demera, played by the fabulous Teo Pinglas, Deirdre Hall, Jake Kosacek. I mean,
Ben?
I mean, look, it's an efficient it's an efficient way to get rid of a lot of, you know, deadweight characters. But no, I mean, I guess the stakes, you know, when you think back to the history of, you know, the high stakes days, serial killings, you know, killing a girl to frame Chad and then killing another girl because what she saw it, and you know, now wanting to strangle Marlena because she's the shrink on the case. It
she mew too loud.
You know, for me, I like I said, I would love to love it, but I'm not. I can't lie. I do think it's a good thing in that, you know, and I hate saying this because he's so good looking and I loved him on All My Children. But I'm glad that, you know, this will help usher Robert Scott Wilson off the canvas, because he's just been like dead weight on this show. And yeah, that's I wish I could love it.
It should have been his daddy. It should have been Billy Clyde Tuggle. It should have been him instead of this boy.
I agree. Sarah,
yes.
You weren't here last week. What are your thoughts on the serial killer storyline?
I mean, I've predicted it was Ben from the moment Chad became a suspect, just because he's the person with the biggest axe to grind against Chad, because it's, you know, Chad can actually give it to his woman properly. And and we saw them on you know, all those, like, you know, lawn furniture and then in the bedroom all on the same night. So, you know, there's that. It's just not very interesting. Like, I mean, I kind of like that he's done a good job of killing characters that irritate me. So, you know, I guess I owe him thanks for getting Paige off the canvas. And I suppose it was like a decent, like, I see they're sort of using it as almost like the vehicle to make other things happen. It was the vehicle to get A. Martinez onto the show because, you know, suddenly he's Paige's dad and Rafe and Gabby's dad, you know. So in that sense, I see what they're doing with it. It's just not. Like Jamie said, it's just not an interesting storyline because who cares about Ben? Who cares about Abby? We know Chad's innocent. Like, the only, frankly, the redeeming aspects of the storyline have been Billy Flynn's performance as he doesn't know whether he's guilty or not for a while, and then he figured it out this week that he was innocent. It's just no one will believe him. You know, that's been the interesting aspect of it. But it's pretty dull. I just want it to get wrapped up, get all this, you know, dead weight off the show, and let's just move onwards.
Let's set a GoFundMe up for that boy for killing off those people, because I'm like, you killed Paige, you deserve a fucking medal, boy. You deserve to get off, I say.
Mike, one of the things that our commenters pointed out after last week's podcast is that we should be excited because Days of Our Lives has drastically improved over what it had been. Now, you've been watching a different days than the rest of us, but so you may not be seeing any difference, but what are your thoughts on the serial killer storyline?
Oh, I see a huge difference, and I have to wonder what show you guys are watching, because it cracks me up that
the one on screen
of the four soaps, it's constantly like Days is the worst for you, when for me it's completely the best. And I think it's made great strides in trying to fix things. Things are moving better. There's more excitement. The hour goes by quickly. As far as the serial killer goes, I'm with Sarah. You know, I don't love everybody on the show, so Ben has managed to pick off a couple people that I was indifferent about. But I got the feeling that maybe Ben is a red herring. I know they said they were going to reveal the killer, and then we would have to watch it resolve through. But, you know, Daniel came in, and he's leaving the show. Aiden is skulking around, and he's leaving. And I know Ben is the only one that really has the most plausible thing. It could be Clyde as well. So I'm not really convinced that it's Ben.
No, it's not Ben. A red herring. They've done the exit interviews, or not exit interview, because they didn't talk about him leaving, but they've done the prerequisite soap opera digest. So you're the killer interview is in this week.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Well, and for me, I will admit that Days of Our Lives functionally has improved. But I do agree with Jamie and Sarah in that, as far as serial killer storylines go, for Days of Our Lives, this has been a bit of flop.
Agree with Mike. I mean, if you
I know.
I'm not a huge fan of serial killers in general, because they always tend to be flat for me for all the reasons that you guys are saying. So it's not really this particular story that I'm invested in. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, I think it's a crime that Cassie DePaiva is leaving when she is just starting to get her character to be more interesting.
Oh, you've got 6 months.
Yeah, I get that. But my thing is that, like, she has really been a go-to watch for me, because this past couple weeks since she's found out about Paige and then, you know, Eduardo and all that stuff, she has done so much better. She's integrated. She's gotten into more conversations with other characters like Kate. And I just find her far more interesting, because it was starting to wear on me that she was always worried about Paige and JJ and Jennifer. But she's really – they took her out of that, and now she's shining even brighter than before, and she's the one that's leaving.
Jamie, you touched base – or you mentioned the fact that a lot of our readers agree with Mike, and there was reaction to the podcast. And you wrote a post about Cassie's departure and the fact that – she has done a admirable job in the role, even though it wasn't necessarily the best well-written storyline for her. What do you say to the listeners who agree with Mike, who are like, this is drastically improved over what it was, Ben, we should be thankful?
Oh, I say what I always say about all of television. It's subjective. I mean, this is no different than, you know, every third person I talk to, including my mother, telling me that I must give Mad Men a chance, because it will, if I just give it a chance, it will be my favorite show. And I fall asleep every time I queue up Netflix to watch one. I mean, television is subjective. That's the thing. I mean, and you know, Lord knows we've built a brand on being able to say when something is just so awful. And I'm not saying that. I don't think that Days is awful right now. I'm just saying this is more fan Jamie speaking than, oh my God, we have to save the genre. I'm not in that mode. I'm saying for me, fan Jamie, who's watched Days since the crib, I'm not wowed. They're definitely making improvements. They're putting the vets on screen. A lot of it just feels a little paint by numbers for me. And they've always done serial killer stories so well in the past that doing a lame one is a letdown for me, because I'm wanting the energy of the Salem Stalker and the Riverfront Knifer and all of those things that, you know, like in real life, if there's multiple murders among people you know in a small town, the entire town's going to be galvanized. It just feels like everyone in Salem is going about their day. You know, all of these new plots are being formulated very quickly. and I'm not feeling a lot of the energy. I think that there's been discussions to do the things that fans want, you know, the ISA, the this, the that, but it's just kind of feeling a little
it needs
you know, a shot of B12, and that's what a serial killer storyline usually is, and I don't feel that. I feel it's very talky, and you know, Patch and John and everyone who's involved in the hunt for Bo, other than the very dramatic moments of Peter Reckle lying on the floor writhing, you know, that's dramatic, but I feel it's a bit anemic, and I feel like it's plot driven. And, you know,
do you think it's dialogue heavy? Because I was watching the Patch stuff this last week, and while I get that he's searching, I just felt like he's doing a lot of talking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that whole exchange about John Snowden, I mean, not Lord. Sorry, I was just reading.
John Snowden? Just, you know, you've been snowed.
No, I'm all hyped about John Snow's picture.
I know exactly what you're thinking.
All that, I mean, and we talked about that.
Tune into the Pop Confidential podcast where Jamie freaks out over John Snow pictures.
But back to Edward Snowden, and we talked about this last week. I feel like, yeah, it's very, very talky. It's very, you know, whereas, I mean, God, go look at the clips. When Bo and Hope went on an adventure, you know, and I know they don't have the budgets and all that, but they do have sets. So, you know, I want to see Patch in a warehouse punching a, you know, we'll talk about this on the Pop Confidential podcast, but I'm watching that show Blind Spot, which I enjoyed. That's what Days used to do. That's what, you know, I assume GH did a lot of that too back in their action adventure days. It's, you know, we want to see the Rock'em Sock'em. You know, we want to see Patch and John karate chopping someone. And I get that these guys are 60, but I would love, I mean, my thing is,
Stephen Nichols still can look good. So
that's
yeah,
true.
Those flashbacks really showed his lack of aging to good effect,
yeah,
I must say.
That's my
Benjamin
thing.
Button ass. I'm like,
in the movies, you know, there's been a huge trend with these, you know, teaming up Schwarzenegger and Stallone and all of these people to do these big, you know, the Reds movies and that other one. And, you know, I feel like GH did that with, you know, when they did their, you know, all of the good guys versus Jerry Jackson, the, you know, the one percenters and all that. I felt like we saw a lot of that, you know, like Crichton Clark, that, you know, when, you know, think about how we geeked out when Anna and all of them are with their guns, you know, shooting through Crichton Clark, whatever, one of those nut houses Ron was sending everybody to. You know, with this, I'm just
Miscavige is the nut house. Crichton Clark was that thing.
I wanted that for Days. That's what I assumed it would be. You know, not all this talking. I'm like, let's get a little more little less conversation and a little more action. Elvis Presley said it best. I want to see Pat and John on a boat.
Show, not tell, pretty much.
You know, somewhere punching somebody in the face. Hi-ya! Remember when Bo punched a woman? You know, an evil, you know.
You can't do that, Al.
It was something. Look, it was an evil female operative. Bo knocked the shit out of her. They, you know, they was karate chopping and stuff. We're not seeing none of that. It's just talking. You know, I want more. To borrow from, you know, Steve Burton, I want something more than this.
I guess that they trying to say if Bo and Patch and John go, hiya, they're sciatica or act up or something.
I will say, you know, that first day of their new material, we got a tease of it with, you know, as Jillian calls him, Billy Clyde, you know, Pop LaBluff beat the snot out of Aiden. I want more of that.
Aiden is a pussy. I'm like,
I'll tell you what I want. And, you know, it doesn't matter because it's already in the can. But when look at the 1990 story, when Bo came back and, you know, little Stephanie had been kidnapped. And their first reconnection was, you know, Patch running afoul to some Aussie knuckleheads, and Bo didn't even know it was Patch yet. He just was ready to fight. And, you know, that's Days. It was so hyper-masculine, and And my thing is, what they need to be doing, and General Hospital didn't do this well either, in my opinion, with the 50th, and I think that's what led to some of the problems. They really need to bring in the next generation of those superheroes. I mean, look at when they do Die Hard. When they do a new Die Hard, they cast some young hunk to play
Oh, please don't compare that. That was a terrible Die Hard.
No. He's not saying.
I know.
You have to move it forward. You have to, if you're trying to lure in old fans, you bring in all the people from the 50th, but then you bring in their kids as those archetypes to replace it. And I think
that's what Joey comes in.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a cute little kid, but I don't really see him, you know, being Patch in training. I mean, he's a bratty little kid, and that's great. But, you know, I hope that Jason Cook is going to be that. I really hope that Sailor Man is going to be his father's son and come in and be, because Jason Cook can do all that punching and hi-ya and, you know, all that stuff that I loved back in the day on Days. And I don't know. I mean, again, we're having the funeral next week, this coming week, of Paige. Now, and it, you know, I read a spoiler of Teresa breaking down. Oh, she finally know? You know, yes, she finally know that, you know, I mean, it took too long. They're not playing the beats effectively, in my opinion. But,
yeah. Now,
speaking
Sarah,
of not playing beats, yes. Are we going to talk about the Bold and Beautiful?
Just kidding.
We are. I've got a few more things to cover first. Now, Sarah, yes. A. Martinez has debuted as Paige's father. What are you thinking of him?
I think he's doing a good job. I wish his character... Here's the deal. I'm sort of halfway in between Jamie and Mike's take on Days of Our Lives on a day-to-day level, especially because I just caught up and watched a bunch of them at once. Days is so much... like the how do I put this? The craft of each episode is so much better in terms of like there may be too much dialogue, but it's good dialogue. The performances are better. It's all the little things are there. It's just now we need sort of the big things. And so I think he's doing a great performance job in terms of, especially because he had to come in out of nowhere. His character hadn't even really been foreshadowed. And, you know, you suddenly learn, oh, he's this deadbeat dad to two different families. He's got, feels guilt, he feels this, and he's managed to, as we would expect from an actor of his caliber, play all the beats and give us a sense of who the character is and have chemistry of Cassie to Paiva, because they had to just build that relationship out of nothing, basically, and they did a great job. But it's one of those things, though, where I'm like, but what's his character's storyline? His character has feelings of remorse and, you know, feelings of, oh, I should get back together with these other things, and, oh, I can get to know Gabby, and she doesn't know who I am. But I kind of want him to have, like, a firm storyline where it's like, and he is secretly ISA or whatever Days type storyline they want to give him. He is, you know, this. He's that, he's whatever, working for the Kyriakis. He's something beyond just him being there and having emotions. And I know there that may all be coming and I could just be being impatient, but I'm, you know, if it's just, oh, this guy wants to forge a relationship with Gabby and Rafe has issues with him, that's sort of squandering a Martinez to me.
Jillian, what do you think of the news that Nadi Bjorlund's returning?
Cool. I mean, she, you know, she was just there, so you couldn't even like miss her that long. So I'm glad that, you know, the last gang are all coming back. We just need Mimi, and then we have a party.
Yes, we do.
We have a party. I'm like, come on now, hiya Farrah Faff. Don't y'all be stanking.
JPL.
She's married. She's like, I's married now, so.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, they listen, as many of the behind the scenes stuff that has gone
Tyler
on today,
Christopher and Tyler Christopher and Natalia Livingston. Hello. So I'm like, give me a
Well, Farrah did tweet recently to a fan that she is retired from soap operas. So.
No. Oh, no.
No, that's terrible.
Farrah, quit playing, girl. You damn well better bring your ass out of retirement. Don't you do that. I need the last gang there. If we like, someone really needs to like go in there and be the soap whisperer and be like, "Come on, Farrah," and get her in, because without Mimi, it just I mean, it's going to be good, but without Mimi, you're just going to be missing a little oomph. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I want to know if it was a her actually consciously turning them down, or her just saying, well, they didn't ask me back, so in my opinion, I'm retired, you know?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of last blasts, Mike, Ridge can't get Caroline pregnant. And
that was awesome.
Brooke Logan.
But meanwhile, Caroline found out that she is pregnant. And at first she thought, oh, it could be either of them. It could be either of them. It only happened once with Thomas. But then she gets home at the end on Friday's episode. And before she can blurt out her happy news that because she's been assured by the doctor that it more than likely is Ridge's, Ridge drops the bomb that he's sterile.
Okay, now, he has a reason to say it like that, because he's from a foreign country, because when Torsten said sterile, I was like, what is that? I'm from the South. I know we talked
I was
going to
say something.
But ain't it sterile?
It's sterile. So
Luke is repeating it. Sterile.
I'm just, I watched that episode before I recorded this podcast.
Like that. He goes, I'm sterile. I'm like, you making up words? Your dick hurt that bad, you making up new words? No, I'm just playing.
Mike, what do you think of the predicament that Caroline now finds herself in?
Predicament!
Wow.
How apropos.
It's not surprising, right? I mean, this was pretty obviously coming, but...
Well, what I thought was interesting is it confirmed that they actually had sex, because
yes,
on the last
yes.
podcast there was a question of whether they actually did.
I agree with that. That was one thing that was cleared up. And I don't know why when Thomas has a flashback, he doesn't remember having, you know, the full-on sex. He remembers the little kiss. But anyway.
Maybe they can't afford the wardrobe. Yeah. When he...
That's a lie. They sold internationally. They can afford.
So, yeah, I guess it's... It's okay. I guess there is still a chance that it could be Ridge's kid, so it's going to be this big decision about whether Caroline tells him or not. But, you know, I'm still not really a huge fan of this pairing. I think Caroline does work better with Thomas, and I even saw a little bit of chemistry between Ridge and Brooke, which I have not seen since Torsten K took the role over. But I kind of think that, you know, they're gonna do what they always do. Like, I think of B&B as like a merry-go-round, not because the ride is in a circle, but because every 2 weeks the ride shifts 90 degrees. You don't know how you got from point A to point B. It's all filled in gaps and conversation and story, and then it's kind of good while the ride is stopped, but then the ride moves forward again, and then I have to try to figure out. Like Caroline was talking about how badly she wanted a child. Well, this just started, and I don't think that she ever said that she ever wanted a kid until like the last 2 weeks. So now, I don't know. It just becomes like that all-consuming dialogue that makes you think that she's wanted a kid all along, when in fact that she really didn't. But anyway, well, so it's okay. Sarah, it's good. It's good drama. I mean, B&B was a little boring for me this week, but overall, they have some good bones for some good stories that I think that have really good potential. So I'm not hating it. It's just, you know, you sit here and you talk about your Days thing, and I have my B&B thing, and it's just like, for me, Days takes the time to fill in the gaps and give me the story, because it's a soap opera, and then B&B just jumps forward and leaves huge.
Okay, let me ask you this, because, you know, when, as you're saying that, I'm sitting here thinking, when did Rafe, Will, or anyone on that canvas hear a word that Gabby was up for parole? It was like, Gabby is out of jail today! And
that
she's coming home.
Beat miss.
It's
like,
it's not that much of a stretch to think that a woman wants to have a baby. You know, except for, you know, a minority of women don't want to have a baby.
She said it before all of this happened, that she wanted to have a kid.
We all watch a different shows, because they literally...
Yes, we are.
Will came home, and it was like, guess what, Will? You know, Galen Garen is like, Gabby's out today. Will's like, but she murdered Nick. I mean, that's awesome, but yep, she's up for parole. Good behavior. I mean, she's like, Cookie, good behavior. Y'all better let me up there. What y'all cooking some chicken?
No, she was released on a technicality.
Yeah,
but we never knew that. We never.
Well,
like,
you wouldn't know that. I guess maybe they would know about a court appearance, but I mean, for parole, yeah, you would know because the families would go and everything else.
No, you're missing what I'm saying. I'm saying that's you talk about B&B missing beef. That's a huge drum.
The Hortons would have had to be notified.
Yes,
maybe for yes, I agree with that.
Julie would have said something. You know,
I had already thought about that, yeah, but I didn't
I'm
know
so
on a
guilty of those types of things.
Didn't know on a technicality that that would actually happen.
You know, and also I can't even remember their surname now. Rafe and Gabby Hernandez. Like, where was it when Teresa Lopez Fitzgerald got ran over by that car? What was her character's name? You know, this family has had all sorts of tragedies. You know, Gabby
went to jail.
The mother.
I've seen them call the mother and be like,
"Yeah, the mother talks."
Yeah.
All soaps have things pop up out of the blue that are odd. Paul Hornsby suddenly comes back after 20 years and it's like, hey, y'all, I'm home.
My expectation when Allie died that there was going to be some big thing with Thorne and Ridge, and Thorne came over and he's like, oh, Allie's dead. I'm going back to Paris. And that was the end of it.
That beat sucks. I mean, B&B is not perfect. You know, I mean, that sucks that they're not doing that. They need to do way more with Sean Kanan and
Quinn.
And Rena Sofer, and I mean it's not perfect either. I mean, I just feel that with the stories it's telling, you know, because there's always going to be a
The problem, I think, one of the issues with B&B, now that you've mentioned Deacon and Quinn, is that people do disappear, and this was always the case where they would have somebody on the show, bring them on, and then they would be on for a short time and they would disappear because they weren't the core four group of people and the very close people around them. So people like, you know, Holden Snyder, his name? Don Hensley. Comes on, big fanfare that he's going to be on the show, and then he's on and then he disappears.
I think that they've been better about that, though.
Yeah, I do too, but I know that Sean Kanan is he's out doing, isn't he filming?
No, I don't know, but he would definitely like to be, because you can tell with these fans, they retweet, like, you know, I was just like you're thinking that maybe Sean was filming, or, you know, maybe he is, and that's okay. That's what I thought about Catherine Kelly. I was like, well, you know, she's so busy with her bike riding and stuff, maybe she doesn't even care, but you can always tell with what an actor is retweeting, and I noticed the other day, a fan was like, "We need this new generation is great, but we need more from Brooke Logan." And Catherine retweeted it, so I thought, "Oh, you know, when a retweet is very powerful these days."
Yeah.
Now, Sarah,
yes,
I want to, before we move on to other topics about B&B, I want to touch on something that maybe I'm overthinking it, and far be it for me to ever overthink anything. But the way Ridge worded him telling Caroline about how I can never be the father of your child this last week, I was like, that seems really sort of weird. And it's like, are we now potentially headed down a path where Ridge is just going to be okay with the fact that Thomas is the father of his child, of Caroline's child? I was like, please.
Were you that day they taught foreshadowing and Iron
I heard that too. I didn't think anything of it, but I do remember that. I'm with you.
Thinking Agatha Christie might be about to stumble onto a clue.
But it does, like, but that's not necessarily good drama if Ridge is okay with it. But
I didn't get that at all. I mean, I think he was in his mind, he was going to be like the martyr and be like, I am going to let this beautiful woman go, and she will find a man who will give her her baby, and they will live happily ever after. He wasn't like, it will be my son.
It was foreshadowing. It was clever
foreshadowing because she was thinking, oh, it's possible for him to be the father. And for her, and he was like, no, I can't have your children. She's like, shit, I'm having your son's kids.
She's thinking about her dilemma.
Yeah.
His wording just happened to hit her in her gut. That's just classic.
I didn't get that soap writing.
Like,
I didn't get Ridge being like, I'll be the pappy. No.
I mean, and the thing is, if she had right after him, you know, if she had said, like, right when he got back together with her, if she had said, look, last night I got really drunk, I had, like, this meaningless one-night stand, can you forgive me? Ridge would probably have been like, yeah, as long as she didn't tell him it was Thomas. You know, he's Mr. European. Ish, I understand these sorts of things. But, you know, yeah, this is, I don't think he's going to be okay with it at all. And I think, though, he's, I think it is going to be one of those things where, like, he ends up, where, like, everyone sort of, you know, it, the question is whether Caroline's going to be like, but it's a miracle, or if, like, you know, and she doesn't tell him about Thomas and he's just going to have to accept it, or, you know,
the DNA test will be too close. He'll never be able to fully dispute that it's not his child.
Yeah, I mean,
DNA is now a lot more. No, they'll be able to tell.
They will, but they have to look for it specifically. Yeah. Like, you have to do a more refined
thing. Did a very complicated explanation about her testing, her period, the timing. So they're setting this up really, really well.
I thought it was interesting that she said, oh, she did have a period. And it also makes her smart because, like, you know, then she would assume everything was good until, you know, the doctor's like, a little lighter, you say? Maybe.
She did a great job
false.
With that.
Yeah, this isn't like Thomas and Ridge are twins where they're like, oh.
No.
No. This is, no. I'm like, what? You and Mike watch a different show.
This would be a good chance for, the, like, if they did want to play that, well, the samples are so, you know, so similar. You know, all they would have to do, this would be the time, Hunter Tylo fans can be happy I'm about to say this. All they got to do is, well, really, no. Actually, they don't need it, because all they got to do is test. they do, because Steffi's kinder. But bring back Taylor. You know, test Taylor, and, you know, that would be, if Taylor's kin to the baby, then.
So basically what we would have to do is go through the Ava and Avery
thing. They don't even need, I believe that's stuff that Soap invents, because I know that Shaka Nisha in the hood has had that type of situation already, and you can buy DNA tests now at the CVS. So I believe as rich as those people are on Bold and Beautiful, she can go in there and whisper to that doctor, so I didn't want to tell you this before, but the dude I was hunching, he's my husband's son. And then she's going to look at it like, ooh, skank. And then can you go ahead and, you know, do an extra crispy DNA test on me so I can
extra crispy. Oh god.
Yeah, no, well, they just have to get.
She had some of Thomas's drumsticks.
I think that Lindsay Godfrey did a great job of looking sucker punched in that scene. She did a really, really good job.
So much as an actress.
She has. Yep. But I gotta tell you, I don't like this little giddy schoolgirl Caroline. I liked her when she had a lip more punch to her, but you know, whatever. Yeah. She's doing a great job with it.
You know it's gonna come down the pike when she and from the valley, aka Brooke to the Logan, is like, okay, I let my man be on loan for a minute. I'm coming to get him. I think we're gonna see that girl come out when Brooke is like, I'm coming to take my man now.
I just hope they play a lot of John McCook with the fallout because you know, spoiler alert, you know, next week Thomas and Ridge come to blows. So I'm assuming it all.
Yeah,
I want Eric to be the one to say, you know, because, you know, another spoiler alert, you know, Ridge is going to buy Thomas a ticket out of town, basically saying kick rocks. And, you know, Eric needs to be there to say, oh, should I have sent you away when you porked Brooke when she was my wife? Because this is history repeating itself. Mm-hmm. And it is. It's old school bell soap. I mean, we all know. Because Brad thanked him, and, you know, it's just, you know, we know that the lion's share of the legwork in crafting that transgender story was Patrick Mulcahy. Uh-huh. This is classic Bell. That's Brad Bell to a T. From the, oh my God, I had a vasectomy. I mean, that's just Belle. Victor done had 8 vasectomies.
Oh my God. Yeah. You know, he shouldn't even have any.
That's like Belle. Everybody, I got into a debate with a fan about Marlon's rules. If there was a Bill Bell's rule, it's like, put two people who are related by blood in a triangle with someone else, and then do a paternity pickle, insert as needed sex thinking you were sleeping with someone else, but it was the other person, or vasectomy, and or both for good measure. I mean, you know, because it's like Bill Bell, I mean, if you look back all the way from his start at days, you know, the first thing, the Hortons were this happy-go-lucky, nice Midwestern family, you know, that all, you know, 5 kids loved each other and loved their mama that first season. Second season, when Bill Bell took over, he came in and was like, okay, I'm going to put a woman between these two brothers to make them fight over, and I'm going to have this brother rape her, even though the woman is in love with him. She's going to be tortured for years and think that the kid is the wrong brothers, but then the daddy is going to find out. And because, you know, Tom Horton lied. You know, it's so funny because now I know it drives Luke insane that the Hortons are so saintly, which, you know, they weren't really that saintly in the 60s. Tom knew that Bill fathered Mike, not Mickey, and he and Laura conspired and lied to hide that from them until Mickey, you know, until Mike was a grown man. And, you know, Bill Bell put, he's the one who put Julie and her mama in a love triangle with Doug. So, I mean, this is classic Bill Bell, you know.
And does that explain why the ratings are up, Jamie?
I don't know, but it does make me wonder, what is Thanksgiving like with the Bell family? I'm sorry. Not all writers write from their real life, but I'm like, dang, Bill, you sure like to write some incestuous stuff. No, anyway, yeah, the ratings are through the roof.
And I misspoke in the entrance. I said, or intro, I said 2006-7. It was 2005-2006.
Yeah. Yep. CBS Daytime is just really able to be like, nah, what's this?
Hey, goodbye.
They're whooping ABC's ass right now, man. I'm looking at those numbers. You know, all this talk we've read over the years, you know, there's no way to stop the viewer erosion, OJ this and that. CBS, I'll tell you, the first time I had lunch with Angelica McDaniels, she said when she came in, previous regimes at Y&R, we're all about saying we can't stop the bleed out, that this is just, you know, this is just what's happening in the industry and blah, blah, blah. And she said immediately, I'm not accepting that. And, you know, proof is in the pudding. They have stopped the bleed out. And it's funny because, you know, GH, you know, when it did well, it did, you know, so hugely well. And then Y&R was kind of, you know, we made jokes because it was just like better than last year. But it's more like the CBS Daytime machine has been more like the little engine that could, even with the, you know, the regime changes every year at Y&R. And, Brad has kind of had 3 or 4 different versions of Bold and the Beautiful in the last 5 or 6 years. But, you know, really, as we've talked about, post losing Susan Flannery and Ron Moss, it was like a wake-up call, and he was like, look, I got to get this show together, and did, and I think we're seeing, you know, the fruit of that, and it proves that Alana being healthy helps, because ABC has all those problems with The View, too, and, you know.
They have problems with actor issues, well, yeah. just as a mention,
right.
If anybody was expecting us to be discussing Nancy Lee Grahn on this podcast, because we recorded last week episode before, we discussed the Emmy fallout from that in the Pop Confidential podcast, and we're not going
to
rehash that.
No, it's time to move on. But back to the lineup thing with CBS, you know, it isn't just the soaps that are up. Let's Make a Deal had its best season ever. The Talk tied The View, no, bested The View for the first time ever in adults 25 to 54, which I've been told has increasingly become the most important. I think 18 to 49 is still the one they sell to most, but 25 to 54 has become increasingly important, I was told.
Except for daytime, yeah.
Yes. So as the fan base ages out. So, yeah, they have a strong lineup. It's like, you know, let's make a deal. The price is right. And get it. And look, here's the thing, because Daytime Confidential, we are this fall and in the future going to be covering more of the rest of Daytime. We've shied away from it because every time you post about the talk or let's make a deal, there's going to be somebody in the comments saying that this killed As the World Turns. I'm just going to put you on notice. We will be covering those shows. It's a new day, and it is daytime television. Those shows did not kill the other shows. Procter & Gamble wanted out of the business, and you can't blame CBS for programming, and programming strongly. And they've built a very soap-friendly lineup. I actually could see a day when, like, if Let's Make a Deal wasn't performing well, I could very well see a conversation where it's like, well, do we want to put in another talk, a game show, or a soap? I think that if any network would ever do another daytime soap, which I don't know if anyone ever will, but it seems, you know, CBS is the strongest, and I think that should be commended.
But they're also the ones who have invested in, like you said, a lineup. ABC is like, we'll just lose an hour, give it back to the affiliates. NBC gave everything back. You know, they used to have that hour. They didn't even put in, like, game shows or anything when they, you know, got rid of Another World and Passions. They just gave those hours back to their affiliates. They did, like, you don't, if you want to have things do well, you need a lineup. Like, I mean, they wouldn't do that in primetime. Just be like, yeah, we're going to give 8 o'clock back to our local affiliates. You know, we didn't like that show that was on at 8 and we canceled it. No, like, you give that back, you're weakening your entire lineup. I mean, like, people made, you know, Vicky Drummer got some flack for, like, you know, talking up Tyra's new talk show. Well, they need something. I mean, she should be enthusiastic about it. It's her programming, and, you know, her point being whether or not that's a good show. It's like they need some consistency across the ABC stations. And
Sarah, you and I both know that those things do matter. We get comments from people who assume that they're experts that'll say, oh, that show is syndicated, it doesn't matter. Yes, it does. I mean, especially on those 8 owned and operated ABC networks, you better have a good lead in for that show, because that show is the moneymaker. I mean, that's why, you know.
Well, and the thing is what I mean, it ABC is also having problems, because if you look at, like, Kelly and Michael, that's technically syndicated, but it's having its best season. And meanwhile, for a lot of places, for like me, that leads into The View, and The View is tanking and not being able to carry its weight.
Well, The View, I mean, rumors of The View's demise, I mean, yeah, it really looks bad. And, it, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they – what I think will end up happening, and I've talked to some industry insiders, if they ever do decide to get rid of The View – they just replace it with, and this is not proof, this is not me as a scoop saying this is scoop, but I've been told that that's probably when Ben Sherwood would finally get another hour of...
Coming soon.
Another hour of Good Morning America. Because, you know, he did everything he could to get that in General Hospital spot. Now, The View is more of a problem child than General Hospital at the moment. So, you know, I mean, their whole lineup is shaky. And, you know, the thing of it is, it's as Vicky Dummer mentioned in that interview with Michael Fairman, she's not overseeing the Fab Life. ABC is like, you know, it's like these fiefdoms now. You know, back when Brian Franz was there, Brian Franz ran ABC Daytime, and he ran ABC Disney, you know, Disney ABC distribution. So all of that fell under Brian's, you know, purview. That's not the case anymore. Vicky Dummer supervises GH and The Chew. The View is under ABC News. And I really, you know, I thought the Fab Life would be under her until she said in that interview it wasn't. So I don't know who's over the Fab Life. So I'm like, you know, how do you even have conversations about, I mean, we've made fun of CBS Daytime's attempts at synergy, but at least they attempted them. How do you even, you know, foster synergy when so much of that day part is run by Tom, Dick, and Harry? And, you know, and with GH, it's basically been left, you know, Vicky has given the lion's share of the note-giving, you know, responsibilities to Nathan Varney. So, you know.
speaking of fiefdoms, Jillian, what do you think of the fact that Michael seems to be taking over for the Dimpled Dawn?
I mean, it's just so funny. It's just so hypocritical of him. He just did like a serious 180. I understand Sonny caught a bullet, but just the other day you were like, don't let my sister suffer. That's why I took her from you, you funky bitch, you. And now you want to be a mobster? Like, I just find that kind of like, huh? What happened just a minute ago?
And then he doesn't care that Ava is that Ava wants to take that baby out of that environment, not that she's any better. But the whole point of Michael taking Avery was to get her out of that environment. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, no, the baby needs to stay here with Sonny.
It's the devil, you know, because Ava is Ava. I mean, I look at all the shit that she's done. So it's the devil, you know. At least he knows that he can probably have some sort of say with Avery. Whereas if she's with Ava, Ava gonna be like, Trick, get the hell out of my face talking about raising babies. You can't even raise your... Anyway. But you know, like, Ava, no. I can see why he wants Avery with his father, because he can have some sort of input, whereas Ava will just shut it down, and I don't blame her.
And what I don't understand, Sarah, is that Michael, of all people, is the one that's taking over. To me, this bipolar thing with Morgan, I get that the groundwork was, in theory, laid, but I don't think that they necessarily had to actually go down that path. To me, I mean, and we've discussed this on the podcast before, Morgan as the mob prince and Michael as the corporate prince, and them two warring would have been fantastic.
Now we have
Michael with his little, like, I mean, polo shirts and things in the mob and running the organization. And Ava is once again being blackmailed. The lethal Ava, who came in and made us all fall in love with her because she's so lethal, is once again being manipulated by a man. Uh-huh. This is just frustrating.
I agree, and it's so frustrating because they did such a good job of bringing Michael to the Quartermain fold. That was just, it was good storytelling. They played all the beats, they set up all the steps, you know, and I liked the idea of Michael just being consistently Sonny's enemy, but Sonny's enemy who wasn't, like, breaking the law, Sonny's enemy who just hated him, you know, Sonny's enemy who was just gonna be sort of the voice of
not an
legit
arch rival.
Life.
Not an arch rival, but someone.
Yeah, I would have been totally fine with Morgan deciding he wanted to take over everything.
Yeah,
that's in character for him.
Yeah.
But it's like they did this nice character work, and it was so interesting and just, frankly, satisfying to longtime viewers to finally sort of see that come full circle. And they just abruptly took it away. It was like, I don't know if, like, there was someone complaining behind the scenes,
pixie dust.
Or if there is.
It definitely was. I mean, yeah, guys, it was, we know, y'all know, it was the network saying, put House Corinthos front and center and line up all of the soldiers together. You know, I mean, come on.
Well, but I don't understand how, like, that mandate, if that mandate comes down, I don't understand how having Morgan as bipolar, when you could have him as the prince, you can still have House Corinthos. Michael is still going to have to go to family functions like he was going to go to the wedding, and it can still be awkward and uncomfortable while they're fighting. They're still family. You can do all of that without having this giant reversal on all this work that you've made with Michael, who fans have wanted to see him in the Quartermain Mansion. It lasted all of 6 months.
Fans,
Jason, too, because, you know, they're going to take Jason down this road, too.
Fans definitely have been vocal about that. But when this industry panics, it goes back to what it knows. It goes back to what it's comfortable with. I mean, we've seen a dramatic shift in the last couple of weeks. All the humors, yes, this has been Ron Carlovati's writing. It's still Ron Carlovati's stories. But if you notice, every drop of humor has been stripped from the show. Whereas Ron had kind of made the show with all of the complaints that people had against him, and many of them were valid, he definitely made the show not just the Sunny show. I mean, it could be argued that he made it the Franco and Nina show, which, you know. But, I mean, it definitely was not the Sunny show under him. There has obviously been a huge shift. And, you know, you'd look at the comments Maurice Bernard made at his fan event. You look at the comments Nathan Varney made in his Diana Ross press tour. You look at the comments that Gene and Shelley have made about the family drama and the Corinthoses. You look at what we saw on screen with them digging up Christina and, you know, Dante, Christina, Michael, and Morgan all. I mean, people used to complain about this under Guza with the Sunny worshiping. It was never this bad. Because, you know, you still, with Guza, you had Monica and the Tracys and the Allens and the Edwards. He's a menace! He's horrible, Brenda! Don't you marry him! He'll leave you standing in the rain, bitch, without an umbrella. You know,
well, and where are Tracy and Monica fighting for Michael's soul?
Well, well, that's the thing. There's no balance.
Okay,
right.
People have, right. I'm going to just say this because I see that all the time. I've heard you say it and people talking about it on the podcast and in the comments and stuff. Tracy has never given a damn about either one of Alan's children or the grandchildren. What have y'all?
Well, I said Tracy or Monica.
They don't let Monica out of the closet more than a couple times a year, but she'd be fantastic in doing that.
Monica is too busy hunching Moesha's daddy. She's getting that brown beef, okay?
Tracy caring about Michael is a Ron Carlovati thing. Because y'all know that's what I used to love about
Tracy. Didn't give a shit about Jason. She called him a thug.
About any of those children, she used to. The show used to be. Now that was some dialogue when Tracy would tell her brother, "Yes, my sons might have left me, but I managed to raise them well, and they didn't end up brain damaged mobsters." You know, I mean, she did not care about Alan and Monica's children at all, or their grandchildren. She's become more loving and matriarchal under Ron's pen. And, you know, I don't think she would be fighting for Morgan ever. I mean, Michael or whatever.
But what there is lacking, though, is a balance. Okay. And I think that's what I'm getting from what Luke is talking about.
Yeah,
is like, you need to have the balance on the other side, because watching 5 days of Morgan flipping out and everybody being around the hospital bed and Carly yelling at Ava, it was a lot to watch.
Here's my – sorry, Mike.
That's it. That's here, my thing. That just
here,
it was a hard
here's
week.
The thing that I wonder about. All the fans who complained about lack of balance and the fact that their favorites didn't show up on the screen – under Ron are now getting a taste of 5 days a week of the
Be careful what you wish for.
And almost nothing of anybody else with the exception of Sam, boring Jason, and Elizabeth.
You're seeing
the mob, so I don't give a shit.
Seeing what the future of the show is going to be, because that's what Ron was fighting before he was pushed out of the door. This is what he was fighting. And this is what it's going to be, because they have now decided, I mean, look at all the people who did their victory lap when he got fired, and look at all of they're front and center. I mean, let's just be real. You know, the people who, you know, Julian is not in the mob, just like Nancy Lee Grand wanted. You know, he's getting pistol whipped by the violent Corinthos children. And, you know, while she looks on in horror at the mob violence when she sleeps with every mobster she sees. And, you know, the Corinthoses are front and center. And that's what it's going to be. And that is not what Ron wanted. And that is not what he was hired to do. Because when he and Frank were hired, they were given a mandate to pull back on that. And then they got shaded because of it. And a lot of why Ron got shaded is because of the over-the-top crazy storylines. And that is totally on him. No one told him to do masks and to make Nina and Franco front and center and things like that. Those type of things he has to own, you know, Piccolala and crazy stuff like that and masks. And Olivia Jerome getting pregnant with that silly baby and Connie. Those types of things. That's all on, you know, he definitely, you know, and that's what I wanted to be known. I've never said, if you look back in the weeks before he was fired, we were all freaking out about the state of the show. But he had a lot to fight against with Nathan Varney in his vision. And I, you know, I'm just going to be real about Nathan Varney. I don't, you know, I'm trying to be more balanced and sane about these types of things, but I just don't understand. Frank and Ron, you know, are largely, you know, yeah, they've had their hits and misses, but they were a success story for this show. You know, you look back at their first 2.5 to 3 years, pretty boffo. You add Nathan Varney, you know, and Jillian was the first to point this out. You add Nathan Varney to the mix because I gave him a chance, you know, and then you wonder.
A chance, but
yeah, you know, he's a problem. He is a problem. Did Ron have his problems? Hell yes, he did. He needed to rein that shit in. He needed to stop going so crazy, and you know, that was his tunnel vision. But you know, Varney has his own agenda. I have never seen a current series executive going on soap fan podcast. And Ron, one of the main reasons Ron got fired was how he showed his ass on social media. Again, that is all on him. But guess what? Nathan Varney is on Facebook arguing with fans now. They got the screen caps and the receipts. He is searching his mentions, Vicky Dumma. You know, instead of supervising these shows and trying to do a cross promotion with, you know, having Bonnie from How to Get Away with Murder guest starring on GH to check in because she got her funny bone broke or something like that, like they did with Chandra Wilson a few years ago. Instead of doing stuff like that, you know, live with Regis and Kelly is going to be on Nashville in a few weeks. Instead of making those type of synergistic moves like his, like Angelica McDaniels would do, which he's on that, on the Twitter asking her for advice, you're not doing that because you are on podcasts. You're not supposed to be promoting your damn self. You're supposed to be promoting the soap freaking opera. TGIT is the product that is being promoted. You know, it's not the worker bees who do that. We shouldn't even know your damn name. But you all up in the mix. And I'll tell you, Frank better watch his back. Because Varney is a problem. He's a problem.
Well, speaking of watching your back, Sarah, what do you think of Paul blackmailing Ava?
I mean, it came out of nowhere, especially because, like, they sort of implied it was going to be, you know, someone in the five families that was doing all this. And, like, I mean, what I would have loved is if, like, Ava's response to that, honestly, was to pull out a gun and shoot him in the head. Like, that would have been Ava.
That would have been lethal Ava,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually want Ava to kill anybody else, but I would have loved it if Ava was like, oh, okay, oh, is this the part where I'm supposed to quiver with fear? All right. Yeah, and then, like, an episode later, she's got, like, the goods on Paul and is screwing him over and has figured out, you know, a way to, like, you know, oh, hell, if Ava really wants to fuck with him now, she needs to go seduce Dylan if we want to keep her in the pattern of things.
Oh, that would be good.
Sarah Babel for head writer. Oh.
And you know that, like, I don't think Maura West would complain about having love scenes with that. Paul, that, drink of water, Sarah, is all I'm saying.
You have inspired my Monday poll.
Damn you, Sarah!
No, I mean, like, that to me would be, and then she's like, oh, you want this to stop? You know, you better make this problem go away.
Listen, if she ends up pregnant with a Quartermain child, she'll have a Quartermain and a Corintho.
Sarah, just say that, because the whole time that Paul had his back to Ava, I kept thinking, why doesn't she just pistol whip him and take that thing out and then throw him out in the hallway and lock the door?
That would be smart. I think, like, you know, Mike has a career as perhaps a criminal that he's hiding out on us because he's really got good instincts for this.
Tim Boston.
Total retread of Fluke and the Julian stuff, you know, with Julian being the publisher who no one knew was really a mobster and Fluke being the secret person running the Jeromes. And that's totally Ron, and that's totally repetitive. And that's why, again, I totally believe he needed a break and a co-head, because when they did that reveal, I groaned. I was like, come on, Ron, really? Paul is an evil mob. I mean, Paul was just like, that's, you know, Paul was not some, I mean, I started watching around that time. I mean, Paul and Jenny were this star-struck couple that couldn't be together because, you know, Tracy and this and that. And it wasn't like, I mean, he wasn't some nefarious character. And, you know, now, so once again, we're to believe that somebody has built a mob dynasty off screen. I don't like any of that. This character feels just like Julian and very redundant, and I hope they kill him off, but I don't think they will, because all of the interviews I've been seeing, they're so happy to have him and blah blah blah. I'm like, we've already done this. We don't, you know, Ava, we're all in agreement, I think. Ava does not need anybody. You know, my favorite author just died. She wrote a book about a female gangster called Lucky Santangelo. Lucky didn't need a man to tell her what to do in Jackie Collins's Chances and Lucky books. When Gino Santangelo had to flee the country to go to Ireland on tax evasion charges, and the good boys, good fellas who worked with him didn't want to keep doing production or construction on her hotel, she broke into their house, had her men hold them down and put a switchblade to their ball sack and was like, I expect you to be back on the job tomorrow, right? That's who Ava Jerome should be. Not answering to a man. She should be a lady boss. She should be the lady boss. Mara West is the best actress they've got on that damn show. She should be running stuff. If there's gonna be a mob, it should be run by Ava Jerome. She should not be someone's yes woman. Again, especially not this another lame himbo. You know, we already got himbo Julian running around. These kids are not mobsters. They're himbos. They get their eyebrows waxed. Mobsters do not shave off their chest hair and wax their eyebrows. And
they need to reset Ava. Like,
if you're Duke, you do.
Well, here's the thing. It's just basically, Ava is the only person I would really buy as a formidable foe to Sonny, also.
Yes,
and if you want to go back and retread something in GH history, Faith Roscoe was the shit, and I would fine with bringing that sort of vibe back with Ava.
Ava as the new Faith.
They need to reset Ava. Like, they need to have something happen, something really lethal for Ava to be like, fuck this shit. And for Ava to just go balls to the walls, I'm not taking any bullshit. Like, I feel as though they could do that if they kill off Kiki. I'm sorry, Nathan. I know you want to explore her and she has more to tell. She has more to tell in a casket. I'm sorry.
But she hasn't been on for a month, so who cares?
Care.
Even though the shishy's gone?
But if Morgan or Michael or Sonny were responsible for accidentally killing Kiki the way that Ava accidentally killed Connie, quote-unquote.
I think
it could be good.
I think it should be like this. Like, I feel as though a mob shootout or something should happen, and you don't know who did it. It's between either Sonny or it's between Julian, and Ava just breaks apart from the pack, and she goes against them both. And she go, you know, because of it. You don't know who the person was. You don't know for a while who killed.
Well, write this down. Write this down, fans who have wondered why I'm such a Sonny fan. Because I'm going to say something that you never thought I'd say. I think they have to ditch the mob as the show's central story. I was a huge fan of Guza's stuff. That wasn't Ron's strong suit. And so when Ron started writing the mob, we got the gay mafia.
Jazz hands.
We got all these coffee. Gorgeous mobsters, you know, that don't terrify anyone. You know,
I got my gun here.
You know, Julian Jerome, you know, would be at the Abbey. Night. I'm sorry. Meeting with the five families. I'm sorry. I'm just going to go there. So, this is not the show's strong suit. Now, nothing in Gene and Shelley's writing history has ever told me, ooh, I bet they love to binge Goodfellas. I mean, it organically, you know, when it was good because Guza really loved that stuff. When it was bad, it was because he just wouldn't let it go and he just got too repetitive. Sonny is a central character and can remain a central character, but if you look back to the Claire Labine years when Sonny was on the board of the hospital and donating money to the to the Stone Cates wing, and he was an ELQ board member, he can just be a mobster, but without all these mob fights anymore, because this show doesn't know how to do that anymore. If you want that, I'm just going to be real. Go get Bob Guza again. If not, move past all of this stuff. Start doing public health stories, and I don't mean doing them like, you know, public service stories. You know, there's a huge debate in this country. There was a story just a few weeks ago about a hedge fund manager who bought the rights to an HIV medicine and hiked it up so far.
5,000%.
Yeah, that would be a great story for General Hospital if you had Robin on the canvas and then the villainous, you know, some villain character do that. You know, it couldn't be Nicholas because that's his homegirl. But, you know, if Paul was doing that type of stuff, you know, that would be hot. And then it's tied to the hospital. You tie in stuff, you know, right in, leading into, think about it, leading into the nurse's ball, you have, you know, the new ruthless big, but let that be what the
and Tracy's on the board, right? So wouldn't that be some kind of conflict? Like maybe she knew about it, or maybe she didn't know about it.
Or, you know,
that
maybe
it's a good conflict for Tracy because
bring Jerry Jacks back.
No,
you know, just in, well, that's another mob villain, but I'm just saying some, you know, you bring on, or, you know, you don't know, you don't even have to bring on. You just go ahead and take one of the villains already on the show. I would hate to see Ava do that, but no, I wouldn't, because, you know, women can be lethal too. So let it be Ava. Let Ava buy the rights to some drug medicine and hike up the price, and, you know, that lead to a story. You know, we just had a huge Ebola crisis in West Africa. I mean, I know GH has done that type of thing before, but with Guza, it was more about action adventure and, you know, biochemical, you know, terrorism and stuff. But I mean, what about some another plague, you know, an umbrella story that galvanizes the hospital where everyone in the canvas is affected, and it be an actual disease, not, you know, not a made up disease, not monkey flu or something like that, which, you know, those, you know, they just didn't give them real names. There are a lot of diseases.
Lassa fever. Didn't they have the Lassa fever back in the 80s?
Yeah, and that was real. You know, I thought about this the other week. The Young and the Restless had Sage develop Giardia. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, okay, the soap about, you know, billionaire cosmetics moguls in Wisconsin is doing us, you know, is telling us about a real life infection that, you know, is, you know, reported on each week to the Centers for Disease Control. But the soap called General Hospital is, you know, has nothing to do with hospitals. I mean, Liz and Patrick are the only hospital characters left. I mean, other than, you know, the recurring people. I mean, build up the hospital. Do a new, they need to do a new student nurse program. And that's what you can do with the young characters. I mean, you know, you want to talk about an instant story, but let Bobby, you know, start being a professor at the local university's nursing school. And then you have Christina and Lulu and, you know, four or five other people decide to be student nurses. Lulu has no real purpose. Running that stupid bar, you know, let Dante get shot and Lulu not be able to help him. Then she have a conversation with Aunt Bobby about how powerless she felt. And then Bobby relay how powerless she felt when, what was her dude that got shot down before her eyes?
Ray.
Roy
Martinez.
Yeah, you know, so, and how being a nurse,
Luca.
Being a nurse helps her feel like she has some power in this mob crazed town. And then Lulu announces to Dante she's going to nursing school. And then you have your young women on the show. I don't want Maxie at the hospital unless she's like the public relations exec. I'd rather her be in something glamorous and fun. But Lulu, Christina, or Molly, they could become student nurses. I mean, if you know, I mean, there's just more that they could do. Bring on some new doctors, you know.
Well, for one, they can also use Elizabeth other than this boring storyline.
Elizabeth
which is
dead, so they need a new oncologist. You know, bring back some character from the past who we, you know, Ron was really good about that, bringing back characters and then just defining them. I mean, they did all that talk about the Eckert boy, Sly. Well, what if Sly is a world-famous oncologist and we just didn't know it? And bring him back, you know, or bring back Tom Hardy's, you know, biracial son. Maybe he's an oncologist.
Ooh, get, you know, Rick Williams.
No, he can't act.
Get ooh, Jerry!
Just being real. Like, if we don't have time for that baby to be, you have some sarcomas. No! Get somebody who can
act. He's been acting. Maybe he's taking some lessons and now he got it right. Ooh.
In the words of Lou Kerr, we do not have time!
And I'm going to remind you about that on days. But before we move on to The Young and the Restless, Jillian, I wanted to talk about Patrick, Sam, Jake, and Elizabeth this last week. I know you're a fan of Sam and Jason. What did you think of how that played out. To me, it was snore-worthy.
That's why I said, no, why you gotta make me talk about the boring shit? Like, I just want the reveal to be, oh, to just hit it. I just want hit it. Because this is just, oh my God, it's just so boring. I feel like I should just be, like, doing my taxes or, like, I don't know, braiding somebody's hair. And I don't even know how to fucking braid anybody's hair. Let me just jack up someone's hair. Like, I'm over it. It's boring. I'm tired. I'm done. When is Laura bringing her ass back to Outliz? When you bringing
October 2nd, next Friday. Jeannie
returns. The thing that with Jason that I've had a problem with Adam is that they've been these alter characters for so long that they become
these
other people. Adam is hiding who he is, so he's not really Adam. So, and Jason doesn't know who he is, so he's not really Jason. So he's become Jake, and Jake is not very exciting. So it's kind of like it's been a year. Now it's time to, you know.
Jake should have
Mike,
been
you are just setting up these segues.
Well, Jake should have been, you know, I keep hammering it like, you know, he needs to be integrated a little bit more with Sunny.
So I cannot believe the liaison fan is going to have to say something nice about J-Sam, but the Noodle Buddha stuff was so cute. I mean, you know, he's, you know, I think that, and maybe it's because they were frolicking on the beach in real life together, but
they're just friends.
They're just friends.
I don't hug my friends in the water like that. Me and Lucas, right. Yes, we don't hug in the water.
I don't hug none of y'all in that water like that.
I don't hug in the water with my bosoms.
I'm not going to hug none of y'all in the water like that. I'm like, get up off me.
If I got my bosoms on your chest in the water with my arms around your neck.
Sorry, Sarah. If you drown, I'm not going to drown it for me to hug you.
Anyway, they're just friends, so fine. But Kelly and Billy have chemistry. I wanted, again, I feel like with Days is my baby. I want to love it so bad, but I don't like it right now. But I should be so happy. Liz has never had Jason this long interrupted. And I'm like, wonk, wonk. But when he has scenes with Sam, it's more interesting. And I, you know, at first I was like, well, is this just the recast? And I don't think that's it. I just really feel that first of all, and again, write this down because I'm about to dog Ron again. He totally changed Elizabeth Weber's personality. Uh-huh. Totally, 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 totally. Mm-hmm. She is now a scheming, conniving shrew. And that's not the Liz I fell in love with. And so I can't, you know, it's like, you know, you finally get what you want for Christmas. And then, you know, your mama said, ain't no more software available for, you know, your Barbie dream house, talking Barbie dream house, you know, that shit ain't right. So, you know, that's how I feel about liaison. It's like, you know, who cares? I mean, if Liz has to tell these awful, revolting lies to get him, I don't want them to be together.
It's not the recast, though. It's not working because Jason doesn't know he's Jason. That's not how it works for me. One-sided relationship. He doesn't know who he is, so it's
that
not.
That didn't bother me when John Black didn't know who he was and he fell in love with Marlena. If the chemistry is there, it works. If the chemistry is there, you don't. Deirdre Hall and Drake Hogeston proved that if the chemistry is there, you don't even have to. The person doesn't have to look like the last actor. He can be 3 foot taller and hairy chested when the other one had a spiral perm and no hair, but they just worked. I mean, I totally bought. From the moment the pawn showed up, their chemistry was electric. And, you know, that's what I thought this story would be like. And also with Trevor St. John on One Life to Live. Yeah. Totally, you know, we used to fight on this podcast because Luke and Jillian were team Todd, you know, faux Todd as it was. Todd and Taylor.
Victor Todd. Yeah. Victor Todd.
But, I'm
Cyber High Five and Cassie. Because I love me some Todd and Blair. So, you know, it's not the, you know.
TNT forever.
That's right.
The conceit, because this conceit is as old as the hills with Daytime. I have a new face and I don't have my memories. Yeah. I mean, but it's just not, I don't buy it. I don't buy you know, it's going to trash Liz again. The whole town of mobsters and murderers and whoremongers and thieves and Carly, who got a man drunk and dumped him in the they are going to slut shame Liz nobody's business. They're going to call her every... It's going to be like an episode of Love and Hip Hop Detroit. They're going to call her all kind of ratchet.
Oh, it's going to be like Maury. It's going to be like Maury without the baby. And you stank, hoe! You
and cry and cry and cry and fall apart and have mental problems.
No, I don't, you know what? But the best thing about this with the Liz, the best thing I feel is that with the Liz, Jake, Sam thing, it's going to reset that feud because they've all been bookie. And when Carly, especially Carly, when Carly and Sam find out, they're going to beat the shit out of Liz. Liz better, she better buy
it. I want Rebecca Herbst and Sharon Case to do comedy web series.
Jamie, but you just stole my transition.
I want Rebecca, because those two actresses have more in common than anybody in daytime. I want to, someone should do a Pop, you know, Pop should buy a 30-minute, you know, docu-comedy, you know, loosely scripted about what it's like to play daytime's two biggest kick me sides.
Well, there, thank you, Jamie, because Sarah, I was going to go to you, and my segue was going to be, speaking of trashed women, what do you think of Sharon and Patty in the facility?
I was just so angered in general by Young and Restless this past week. It was like they, it's like I feel like the writers' mandates are like, what can we do to specifically annoy, like, the Daytime Confidential podcast? That's going to be our guiding premise for our writing into November sweeps. Like, it's just, I hate Sharon doing this thing with this baby lie. And you know what the problem is? And it's sort of, in a way, going back to what Jamie says, is kind of similar, I guess, with what we're getting with Liz and Jake, which is, I don't believe Sharon loves Dylan this much. She might be this crazy over Nick, but not boring-ass Dylan. Dylan the walking sleep aid, Dylan the you know,
the man who pets rocks.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan is just the most boring man, and like I just can't believe Sharon would be this desperate to hang on to his boring ass. And it's just like, and I hate seeing her do this whole thing, and again, I hate seeing stories about women with baby rabies. It's like, and it's just like, again, like Sharon Case needs like a special Daytime Emmy category created for her for like maintaining some core of Sharon's consistency through all of these different regimes and making me somehow not hate Sharon and always just hate what the writers are doing to Sharon. Which, I mean, seriously, utterly sincerely, Sharon Case has a gift. And Becky Hurst does as well, but it's just like...
Chuck Pratt said that gift in his interview to Michael Logan was, she doesn't complain. He was bragging on the fact that she's the one actor who does not complain about storylines. I guess she's like, look at her. You know what? My 401k is filling up. It's all good.
And she's like counting. She's like, wait, how many episodes am I on this month? Doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm getting that. I'm getting that money. I'm getting those foreign residuals.
She's
bumping
some serious junior mafias get money. She is like, ugh.
Listen, if and when Young and the Restless ever goes off the air, and considering it's going up in the ratings, that's not going to happen anytime
soon.
Oh, they dipped.
Thank goodness. She is going to have a nice retirement nest egg if she's invested properly.
Let me say this, because I, you know, and the only reason, because anybody who's like, I'm talking too much, I just want to be, in this regard, which I never get to be for Y&R, the other person. I enjoyed the heck out of Y&R last week. I don't enjoy the fact that they want to keep writing Sharon crazy, but come on, y'all. What did y'all think of the whole Sage in the hospital story leading to Nick going off on Victor, thinking that Victor was scheming and conniving, and Victor was like, what are you talking about, fool? Your wife was on the floor. I took a silly ass. Eric Braden made me holler when Nikki showed up and was like, Victor, what's the matter? He's like, I went over to see Liz and Sage and the stupid girl. He kept saying, Victor kept saying that something was wrong with her mind. I was hollering. He was speaking for the audience. You know, I'm talking to her about the baby, and she's lying on the floor, and
I'm like, let me get you some help. And she's like, get away from me. Get away from me. You know, I think there's something wrong with her mentally. It was so funny. And, you know, Nick had to come back and apologize to his daddy. Like, I'm sorry, dude. You know, because can't nobody mean mug like Joshua Bora.
That's true.
I'm sorry, you know, Sage said that she was crazy and you were trying to help. And Victor is talking to Nikki and is all like, you know, my boy is going to be the father of that baby and he has his own family now. He's going to be the patriarch of this family. And for the first time in years, the conflict that Bill Bell set up returned because Victoria overheard that shit and was like, mother bleep. How you gonna be? Oh, she went off on him. Kudos to Amelia Heinle. She came up behind him and he's all, hey, sis. What's up? And she's like, oh, ain't it good to be you, Nicholas? You don't have daddy's back for nothing. I'm sitting here having his back all the damn time. He doing all this silly shit and backing people and stuff.
Yes.
You come, your happy ass. Bartending back up in here, and oh, you just get to walk away with the kingdom, mother. I mean, I was like, this is it. I have been begging for that conflict. And it's
begging for that Victoria. That bitch said, I'm
I was like, yes, God. And then cut to the Abbots. Same thing. Jack is like, Ash, you and Billy shouldn't have bought Stanislopoulos shipping online like that on eBay. It was wrong, Ash. And Ashley, you know, Ashley had just got through ho checking Billy. Like, Billy, why you do that? I didn't tell you to push that Amazon button. I didn't want to buy that company. But then when Jack came in, and if that ain't like a real family, when Jack came in and started fussing, she was like, Trick, you ain't the runner of this company no more. You don't run nothing but your mouth, because I am Ashley Abbott, Real Housewife of Beverly Hills and Genoa City, bitch. I'm the
Salem.
And then he called a board meeting. I'm like, I've been begging for this. I'm like, is it really you, Jesus?
Chuck was like, I'm gonna shut his ass up.
See, my whole thing is, but it's all built on the back of whack Ian Ward. It's like nothing can just happen without it being built on crazy.
I can't care about this. I'm gonna say this too. Ian Ward is good this time for me. I think he works in this story. I hated that whole cult leader stuff, but I think he's...
You're okay with Phyllis losing the three remaining brain cells she had?
No. And you know what makes me be honest with Phyllis? I've written Phyllis off. I just have
Phyllis
to...
Phyllis should know this man, who this man is. Y'all keep saying no. I'm like, did y'all forget that Ian tried to fuck with Summer too? When it comes to her kids, Phyllis will do a background check on you so swift. So for Phyllis not to know that this ghetto booty man is the man that tried to bother Summer.
I don't think she was in a coma, but
she should still try to Google.
Yeah, well, the thing of it is, I don't think she's going to, if you're in a coma for a year, you're not going to Google everything that happened to your family.
Oh, I find this is bullshit.
Here's my thing about that. All are in agreement. Yeah, it's a terrible story for Phyllis. I've written the character of Phyllis off. Hopefully, just like all the other stuff we complained about, at some point they'll fix Phyllis. Fine. But I'm just saying that for the majority of the show, with the Newmans and the Abbots back in play, Ian is a goofy villain, but to me, it's more of an Adam story. I'm loving that stuff. Jack and Ashley going head up, and Ashley telling the board when, you know, Jack was like, I've convened the board because I want to take a yes or no vote about keeping Lhasa Shakshika shipping. And Ashley was like, no, don't get it twisted. This is a vote about the confidence in the leadership of this company. A vote for me or a vote for Jack. And what? And then Kyle is all, my father. And Ashley just slapped him and say, shut up, bitch. And, you know, then Tracy Bregman come in looking like a billion bucks. Hey, bitches. You know, me and Tracy made up because I apologized to her and stuff about making fun of her eating them Sundays and stuff when we was in high school. And so she gave me her proxy. Now, I'm not going to lie. I did laugh about that. I'm like, okay, I have made up with some people who called me fat in high school just because, you know, you grow up and you get mature. I don't think we ever going to be tight enough for you to vote for my family's business for me, though. But anyway, so it was great to see Lauren prance in there. And, you know, Lauren gets to decide and vote, you know. They even used extra board members. You know they wouldn't do that on Days of Our Lives. It would be three regulars and nobody else at the damn Victor's Sugar
Shack.
They paid for extras for the board meeting, for the emergency board meeting at Ashley Wood. And Billy and Victoria have their conflict over it because she was out like, baby, please, if you love me, you'll get us that company back. And Billy's like, I love you, Victoria. Gosh, golly gee willikers, I do. But I'm not going to give you that company back. And then even Summer and Kyle are sitting there and Summer's all, your family has to give my family back that company. And, you know, it's what we've wanted for so many years. I'm just saying, they need their props for that.
Mike, you were agreeing with Jamie. What were your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. I think when I saw Victoria overhear Victor say that to Nick, I was like, oh, game on. Because she's been all over Abby for her inability to be the COO. And I feel like if she can maneuver her place into Newman, it's going to be Ashley versus Victoria. And Victoria going with head to head with Nick. I just think that was a really, I enjoyed that. That was a highlight for this week. And I think it's a really, really good direction to go.
Jillian, what did you think of the conflict?
Oh, it was awesome. It felt like old school Y&R. I told you, I love the fact that, you know, it's no shade against Amelia Hindley. I'm just sorry. Heather Tom just spoiled me with her portrayal as bitch on wheels, Victoria Newman. And then when Victor was all, you're the patriarch and blah, blah, blah. When she was like, oh, not no, but hell no. And she just went ape on Nick's slowful ass. I hollered and I howled. I was like, where have you been? I guess Chuck was like, I could bring it out of her, and it was fantastic.
And it is the writing. I gotta give Chuck Pratt his
props. Because I will give that. That was the best Victoria has been in ages.
Mm-hmm. Maria didn't want to write that type of stuff. She wanted Victoria and living, you know, buying that stupid house. It is so unrealistic that they live in that suburban house and she has $500 million. That's not even safe. Do you know how many people in the hood would want to snatch up one of her kids knowing they got $500
million? Unless that's a gated community, I'm like, what is this?
They don't have no gates and no house, the people, no houses like that.
Yes, they do. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, they do.
It ain't one that'll stop somebody if they find out somebody behind it got $500,000.
You would really be surprised.
$500,000 or $500 million?
I'm like, $500,000.
$500 million, yeah.
$500,000, no. $500 million.
Look at the interior of that house. That woman.
Look at Warren Buffett's house.
I bet you he got some armed guards. Nope. Yeah, Warren Buffett is all, I just live a normal golly gee willikers life. I bet you bust up on that on him.
Shooters in
a Navy SEAL is going to snatch you up.
You can't even go over there to borrow sugar. I'm coming up with some snap. Oh, shit. He was
Now, Sarah.
I live in the same house I grew up in. Go in there and try to mess with him. See how quickly you get shot through the head.
Sarah, Dylan is once again taking it upon himself to try and, out of his coffee shop, solve crimes and combat evil.
He's fucking Jessica Fletcher. But
yeah, I mean, I was about to say, he needs one of those Hallmark Channel franchises of, like, the cozy mysteries where it's, like, the old ladies
fight.
Who are, like, drinking tea and being like, there was a murder at the garage sale. Let me solve that.
A bike and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think, you know what? I'm just going to go there. The way to save Dylan, screw it. Let's just give his character some brain damage and let him wake up with a new, tougher personality.
Put a gun in his hand. Put a gun in his hand. Shit.
Because at this point, this guy is not interesting. And, like, the fact that, like, he has these skills, you're just like, why? Where? What is this his business? You cannot make it. Like, they need to do something. Since he's inevitably going to be there, they need to find some way to make him interesting. And this would, solving crimes isn't the way. Like, get him somehow pulled dirty into the business wars if you want to make him interesting. He's Nikki's son.
Make him a pimp. Let him be running hookers out of the back
room. I pitched that. My pitch for him, you know, during my little attempt, my little conversations, My pitch for him was for Victor to use him as a pawn against the children to get them back into the fold by, you know, basically by grooming him as the heir apparent, you know, still being Victor, not giving a shit about Nikki's bastard child, but using that to make his other children be like, what? And then, but then he actually take a liking to him because he turns out to be, but that was back when he was with Avery. So my whole thing was Avery would start seeing him become more and more like the mustache, you know, so that was, you know, I think that also Steve Burton is one of those actors that gets a lot of say in what the character gets to do and be. And I will say this, I mean, I haven't enjoyed, even with Dylan, I haven't enjoyed him as much ever. Like, I like him with Kevin. I guess I'm just alone. Look, Mike, I feel like you the case. I like him and Kevin solving capers. And
listen, Jamie earlier, like, made a groundbreaking announcement by saying that he wanted no more mob on General Hospital. This may not be quite that groundbreaking, but I will go so far as to say I want Steve Burton back as Jason on General Hospital because it's just not the same. And let Billy Miller go.
And in other news today, we've said that before.
And that's, that's not earth shattering. You've said that before.
Not about Jason. Not about.
Yes, you have.
Off the phone, offline.
I have. Podcast, you've said
you've
that.
You've said it. You've alluded to it. You've joked about it. You've also
you've
been,
said
but
it.
The thing of it is, I mean, yeah, I'm not going to say. I agree with you. If this was like Empire, where Lucius and dude from Breakfast Club had that bit, you know, you show up with your, we joked about that. You show up with your people. I show up with my people. I would love for it to just be on three. And Frank pushed Billy Miller back over to Jill, and they pushed Steve on back. Yeah, I would love that.
Steve do a tuck and roll back and forth.
That's not going to happen. And you want to know why? Because it was a situation where the grass was greener. Not with the actors. Frank felt like he could not accommodate. And look, at the time I had Frank's back, but Frank better get a back brace. Because now I'm like, you know, he could not, from what I was told, you know, he could not meet Steve's, you know, request to be flown in. And, you know, it was just going to be too expensive. That was the whole debate. And I thought, you know, I had his back on that. Because I'm like, you don't, you know, the whole flying. I was like, why do you think he deserved to be flown in? So I had Frank's back on that and on this podcast defending it, you know, with Y&R. They wouldn't let Billy have the outs that he wanted. It was a situation with both of these people where it's like, okay, Frank, this is your show's biggest star, but you can't meet his accommodations. Okay, fine, you blamed it on the budget. But then you have proceeded to hire every freaking star in America from the show he left. You know, you couldn't afford to meet Steve Burton's accommodations, yet then you could afford Michelle Stafford, Billy Miller, Rebecca Budig. None of these people are cheap. That's bullshit now. I'm sorry. I have to say, Frank, that's some bullshit. You should have flown the motherfucker in. And with Wyatt R., you should have gave Billy the motherfucking outs to go do 6 weeks of, you know, whatever he wanted to do. You know, Lifetime Presents Murder in El Segundo. Or if he wanted to do 10 episodes of Limitless, you should have done it. This is the thing. They won't do it for their own stars, but then they're sitting there salivating for other people's stars. Y&R would love to have Billy Miller back. I'm sure GH would be like, baby, baby, please, if Steve Burton could come back and spike some ratings. But this is what happens when you don't value your own talent, but then you lust in for somebody else's talent because you're thinking, ooh, if I can just get so-and-so on the other show, it's going to help my show. It doesn't
work.
Kind of
like Maria. That was kind of like what Maria did, and it backfired.
You know, yeah, Maria couldn't afford Don Diamond anymore. Couldn't afford him. So Brad Carlton, who went from, you know, the Speedo to the boardroom, had to die in a frozen lake. But then Maria went on and cast everybody who ever appeared on All My Children. Everybody. Ain't Phoebe? You know,
she even got Jeannie Francis.
Look, she got a hologram of Ruth Warwick on the show. And now
she brought Mona back. She brought Mona back.
You know, everybody, Pombo, everybody was on this show. Now Tab Martin is on there. You know, why not get a hot nut for All My Children?
Oh my God. Like, you know, it's going to be, girl, it's going to be.
Well, you know. Jamie, as we wrap, final thoughts.
Oh, Michael E. Knight.
It's Doctor Too. I can't wait. Oh, my heavens. Did you see the interview with Michael Logan? He said that, and I quote, Christoph St. John made him giggle like a schoolgirl. I can't wait, Jesus sent us this as a present. He did.
Is that your final thought, Jamie?
Yes.
Okay, Sarah, final thought.
My final thought is, because I had the experience of I'd been out of town and I watched a bunch of soaps, sort of binge watched them, how difficult it was. Like, it was very interesting. Like, Bold and the Beautiful, that was a snap to get through, in part because it's a shorter show. Days, it actually didn't bother me as much because, like, you could appreciate, you know, there was the richness in the episodes. And granted, I did some fast forwarding and stuff, and the Pope interrupted several episodes where I was. But then, like GH, like, which is like the show I normally am like, woo, I get to watch GH. It was like dragging for me, and that really freaked me out, because if you sit down and watch seven episodes of something straight, it's a really good way to really notice what's going on with it.
It feels weird because I'm experiencing the same thing, Mike.
Mine has nothing to do with soap watching, but I would like anybody out there in the universe at the networks to start putting podcasts of their soaps back up and available. CBS used to do it before podcasts were popular, and it was a great way for somebody like me, who now spends an hour commuting each way, to catch up and stay current with the shows. I think a audio podcast of the
wasn't
soaps.
That only the
yeah CBS as
like it.
I thought it was just the PNG.
But now podcasts are all over iTunes and everything else, and I feel like this is probably
smart.
That is smart. Someone please take note of that and do what Mike just said.
Yes, because I don't get free Wi-Fi, and I can't always watch stuff on the train, but I can listen to it, and I can, you know. Know what's going on.
Nathan on MySpace looking to see if anybody's talking about me. Stop talking about me and stuff.
Stalking people on Periscope. Jillian, final thoughts?
Oh, God. My final thought is, surprise, surprise, I'm liking YNR. Chuck, just please, whatever happy juice that you're drinking, keep drinking it. Not drinking, keep drinking it, okay? Because that shit was fire. Because the other day I was just really mad about how the women was portrayed. But now the chicks are like bossing up over there, and I enjoy that. I enjoy when you have women acting smart and not stupid and not man crazy. I mean, you know, I'll excuse Sharon for now. I mean...
And at least we get to hear when Patty told Sharon, I was just talking to my kitty about you. And Sharon Case needs... Sharon Case needs to be an EGOT at this point. She needs a Grammy Award. Sharon Case is spitting rhymes on that show. She's like, you talk to a cat.
That was awesome.
She's going to end up with an Oscar, an Emmy, a Tony, and what is the other one?
That's what he said, an EGOT, a Grammy. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't catch
it. She said, what cat? Oh, it's just the stuffed cat. Sharon Case's eyes bucked his own.
Like, bitch, what? Yes.
That was a good nod for people.
Oh, my God. And the other day,
that was awesome.
Nikki told Victor to shut the fuck up the other day. Victor was running on it. Nikki said, oh, shut up, Victor. I was like,
And I like when she let it slip that she saw Faith. Faith, who changes weekly.
Yes! Faith is Becky from Roseanne. What is, you know, Lacey Gorson, Becky, then she's Sarah Becky.
Plays her.
I like this Becky, though.
Other Faith is in Dolly Parton's Jolene. No, not Jolene, the other one. Pseudo-color Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor.
A coat of many colors or many threads or something like that.
Yeah, a coat for Christmas. So, so she's all doing that. So I'm just like, I guess these girls are like, you know, they see each other in the hallway. Tag, it's you, girl. Bye, girl. I see you. You know, next, because, you know, the other one, she would get little shows and then she'd go and the other one come back. So I guess they both just like, we share this role. We like Mary-Kate and Ashley and stuff.
See, this is what, they accommodated the Faiths much better than they've accommodated the Billy Millers.
Ooh, Sarah! Yep.
Well, they accommodated David Tom, but he came back. Hi, Victoria.
And now we got Grandpa Billy, Josh
I like
G.
Grandpa
Williger.
Billy.
That's, Josh G. Willigus.
Okay, and on that note, wait, Jillian, you had were saying something. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say about the face, that they have different jobs, but Jamie already took that, so.
Okay. All I saw, remember, is like Patty saw her in the hallway, and I was like, oh, God, I hope that she's not allergic to peanut butter.
Oh, Sharon told her.
Yeah.
Because Patty said something like, I just told your daughter where the water fountain is. Yeah. Sharon said, stay away from my family,
Yeah, someone's the one allergic to peanut butter.
I know.
And on that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Add us as a friend on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
The internet anaconda booty. Big ass!